Once again, we are speaking from the House of Representatives in the nation's capital. When we returned you to New York some minutes ago, shortly thereafter, the joint session of the Congress was adjourned, but the House of Representatives stayed convened. Just a minute or two ago, the House of Representatives concluded the business of the day and convened, or rather adjourned, to convene again on Monday. Albert Warner, Columbia's Washington News analyst, is still here in the small library just off the House of Representatives floor and has several more distinguished members of Congress whom he will interview. Albert Warner.
Representative William B. Bankhead of Alabama, Speaker of the House of Representatives, is here with me now. Speaker Bankhead presided with Vice President John Garner at the joint session which has just concluded. Speaker Bankhead, I wonder if you'll tell us a little about the session ahead.
Well, I do not know, sir, that I'm in a position now to give a direct answer to your query as to something about what's going to take place in the session of Congress ahead of us. As all know, we are just convened today, and neither the Democratic nor Republican leaders have had an opportunity yet to fashion or formulate any definite program of action. But I think that I'm justified in assuming that for quite a while, at least, the Senate of the United States will be the center of attention as far as legislation is concerned, because, as you know, during the last session of the House, we passed through this body the Bloom Bill in modified form, and it's my information that the Senate committee will meet either tomorrow or Saturday to take up consideration of some form of that bill. I do not know how long it will be in committee or when it comes out, how long it will be debated. That's a matter that's entirely to be determined by future developments. You, of course, have just listened to the address of the President of the United States. I'm very happy to say it to you that he was received in the House of Representatives by great cordiality and tolerance and respect by both sides of the House, both the Democratic and Republican membership. And I was tremendously impressed with the apparent spirit of pervading all members here that for the time at least partisan politics should be adjourned and that all of us representing all political groups should be unified in purpose and in spirit to do all that we can prudently by tolerance and moderation and sound judgment to preserve the peace of the United States and to prevent our being drawn into any war. You're going to be spoken to now by one of my dear friends on the Republican side, Congressman Ditter of Pennsylvania, who I am sure will enlarge somewhat upon the spirit of friendship and harmony as far as national unity is concerned, which I have just undertaken to express. I thank you.
Thank you, Speaker Bankhead. As the Speaker has said, Representative Ditter of Pennsylvania, Chairman of the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, and one of the minority leaders of the House, is with us now. Mr. Ditter?
I read that, sir. We are at a fateful hour in the history of the American people. Every member of Congress is conscious of that fact. Our deliberations in this session of the Congress may determine whether we follow positively and aggressively the constructive pursuits of peace or allow ourselves to be drawn into the consuming inferno of war. Before such a challenge affecting the destiny of 130 million people, all thought of partisanship gives way to the deepest impulses of patriotism. The heart of America cries aloud for peace. Only calm thinking and deep Americanism will enable us to see clearly through the bellowing fog of alien propaganda to the clear path of national interest. The greatest service, as I see it, that America can render to the world is to keep aglow the beacon light of liberal constitutional government. That light is the hope, and the only hope, I might say, of the world today. At this time, we should support wholeheartedly the President's plea for a unity of purpose. And I feel that unity of purpose can best be expressed in his own words when he said, and I quote, "Despite what happens in continents overseas, the United States of America shall and must remain. As long ago the father of our country prayed that it might remain unentangled and free." And it's in this spirit that the House of Representatives, Republican and Democrat, convene today to try to solve the great and perplexing problem.
Thank you, Mr. Ditto. We've just heard from Speaker Bankhead of the House of Representatives and Representative Ditto, Chairman of the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee. Now, we may turn this back to Mr. Daley.
And while Mr. Warner is attempting to contact Mr. Bloom, the representative from New York, it might be interesting to review once again the history of the special sessions of Congress. This session today was the 25th Congress that has had a special session since its organization 150 years ago. John Adams was the first president to call a special session. He summoned the 5th Congress to meet May 15, 1797, to consider suspension of diplomatic relations with France. Thomas Jefferson and James Madison each found it necessary to call two extraordinary meetings because of the split between the United States and the Great Britain, or rather Great Britain, which led eventually to the War of 1812. Again, Abraham Lincoln called a special session of the 37th Congress on July 4th in 1861, just prior to the war between the states. The greatest number of special sessions have been summoned by Woodrow Wilson and Franklin D. Roosevelt. That it means three each. Mr. Wilson, of course, called his special sessions just prior to and during the World War. Mr. Roosevelt's first extraordinary session of Congress was in March of 1933 to pass emergency New Deal laws. The second was in October of 1937 to enact social, labor, and farm legislation. And today's special session was called, as you know, about the neutrality laws. Now, here is Mr. Warner back again with another distinguished member of Congress. Mr. Warner.
We have with us a woman congressman, Representative Norton, Mrs. Norton of New Jersey, chairman of the House Labor Committee. I wonder if you'd tell us a little about what you think will be in store in the session ahead.
Well, I believe that the Congress will abide by the suggestion of the President and shall not consider any legislation other than the legislation concerning the embargo. At least that is my hope. I believe that the Congress was very much impressed by the message delivered by the President, and I think the great majority of us were entirely in favor of all that he had said.
I wonder if you look forward to a long session and to a bitter fight over the arms embargo.
No, I do not. From my conversation with a great many members today, I believe the session will not be long. I believe we may be out of here not later than 3 weeks from now. I hope I'm a prophet.
As I understand it, the House will be going into three-day recesses until the Senate acts.
Yes, of course, the House already has acted upon this legislation. And until the Senate acts upon it, I presume there will be nothing for the House to do but await the will of the Senate. And no doubt, when the bill comes back to us, why, we shall have our day in court.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Norton.
You're very welcome, and thank you very much for asking me to come here.
Mr. Daley.
And thus the Columbia Broadcasting System concludes its broadcast relevant to the address of the President of the United States before a joint session of Congress on the neutrality laws of the country. You have heard the address by President Roosevelt, and prior to his address and following it, Mr. Warner, Columbia's Washington News analyst, interviewed several prominent congressmen. This is John Charles Daley speaking from the House of Representatives in the capital of the United States in Washington, D.C. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
3:10 p.m. BULOVA Bulova watch time. Here's a distinguished timepiece, the 21-jewel Bulova President in the charm and color of natural gold. Curved, streamlined, an exceptional value. The broadcast of the baseball game between the Washington Senators and the Cleveland Indians will begin this afternoon at 4 p.m. WJSV, Washington. the career of Alice Blair, the transcribed, true-to-life story of a lovely girl fighting for fame and happiness, facing the problems, the heartaches and thrills on the ladder to success. At this time every day, Monday through Friday, join Alice Blair in her fascinating career.
It was the poet Wordsworth who said, "The world is too much with us. Late and soon, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers." And I'm afraid in many ways he was right, especially where we women are concerned. Our daily whirl of activities, the evenings we're out late, those busy mornings cleaning house, everything conspires to play havoc with our complexions. And goodness knows a woman's complexion is part and parcel of her natural charm. That's why it's so important to guard the skin by proper cleansing. I mean with a pure cold cream, Daggett and Ramsdell Perfect Cold Cream, because Daggett and Ramsdell Perfect Cold Cream removes dirt, dust, and makeup without robbing your skin of the natural oils. For your own fresh attractiveness, use it before you go to bed and then again in the morning. Ask at your drugstore or beauty counter for the big, generous 45-cent jar of Daggett and Ramsdell Perfect Cold Cream.
Alice has had an exciting and eventful afternoon at Mercury Studios. William Waldron, the top director, is to direct Alice in her screen test, and the young actor, Barry Clayton, at his own request, is to play with her in the scene. Both Waldron and Clayton were deeply impressed by the script Alice brought to use in the test, and Waldron was more than enthusiastic over Alice's reading of the scene. Of course, she carefully evaded all their questions as to who had written it, for Alice promised Carl Ebright she would, under no condition, mention that he was the writer. The feud between Carl and Hollywood is notorious. Home at the apartment. Uncle Andy, waiting for Alice, hears a tap at the door. A tap that becomes more familiar as the days in Hollywood go on.
Don't need to give myself three guesses who that is.
It's that lady from next door again.
Hello there, Myra.
Hello, Andy. The kettle's on. Come on in and have a cup of nice hot tea.
Hot tea on a day like this?
Of course. Why, there's nothing so refreshing. Come on.
Well, it sounds mighty attractive, but I'm expecting Alice any minute now, and I just don't think I'd better leave.
We could leave the door to my apartment open. Then we'd hear her when she comes upstairs.
Well, I think maybe I'd just better stay here.
Well, everything's all set out, so if you change your mind...
All set out, did you say?
Uh-huh.
Well, come on. I'll come in just for a spell, and we'll leave the door open.
That's fine.
Oh, Mary, you know... You shouldn't put yourself out this way.
Maybe I like doing it. Now I'll pour the tea.
You know, there's nothing more gracious than a woman presiding over a tea table.
Uh-huh. But a tea table should be set with gleaming silver to make the picture complete.
Oh, I hadn't missed the gleaming silver. To me, the picture is already quite complete.
How nice of you.
And there's plenty of time for all that gleaming silver someday when you get a home of your own.
Oh, don't.
Take offense at what I said.
Oh, no, of course not. It's only that the idea of a home is so far from my mind. You see, Andy, I've battled alone and, well... You take two lumps of sugar and no lemon.
No, no. How did you remember that?
How could I forget it? There you are.
Oh, thank you, thank you. You know, it seems to me, even if a woman does follow a career as her life work, and chooses to battle through alone, as you say, there's still no reason why she can't have her own home and even have the gleaming silver.
Oh, of course, if her career is a highly successful one. You know, I wonder sometimes if I've chosen the right path. Andy?
Hmm?
I had a chance to go on location for 2 weeks.
Yes?
I'm not going because of you.
Oh, now, see here, Mary, you can't let us interfere with your work like that.
Can't I? Well, I just couldn't bear to go away for 2 weeks. You don't know what it's meant having you and Alice so close by. Well, for the first time, this little apartment has seemed like a real home to me. I never knew what I was missing before. It's been such fun asking you in for tea, running in and out, asking your advice.
Oh, but, this will have to stop, Myra, if it's to interfere with your work.
Well, is work everything? Oh, come on, let's not even think of it. I did it because I wanted to.
Well, no, I don't like that one bit.
No, not another word about it, do you hear? We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to be very, very giddy over the weekend. Oh, I have such wonderful plans. Andy, have you ever been to Venice?
To Venice? Mm-hmm. Well, no, I should say I haven't.
Would you like to go with me?
Go to Venice,
would
you?
Oh, you sweet thing. I don't mean to Venice, Italy. I mean Venice, California. Down by the beach.
Oh,
it's like Coney Island.
Oh, well, that's a horse of a different color.
Andy, you're too wonderful for words. Will you go with me? We'll have a rollicking time.
Well, it sounds a bit giddy for a man of my age.
A man of your age. When you get on a roller coaster, you'll forget that such a thing as age.
Me on a roller coaster? Uh-huh. Oh, the very idea.
Oh, that's just the way you talked about dancing the other night. And you turned out to be the best partner I ever had.
Yeah, well, that's a bit different from a roller coaster.
Oh, you old blasé New Yorker. Of course, I realize that Venice isn't nearly as big as your Coney Island, but things don't have to be big to be cozy, do they?
Not at all. Your apartment, for instance.
It would be such a lot of fun.
Me on a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Zooming through space. I don't know. I just don't take to those things.
Oh, you never know how much you like a thing till you try. And I promise you won't fall out, because I'd hang on, very, very tight.
I don't know. I may consider it after all.
If I coaxed very, very hard.
Well, and you say you'd hang on very, very tight?
Uh-huh.
Well. Straight or stolen, one uncle. In here by any
chance? Oh, hello there, Alice.
Hello. Come on in.
We left the door open so I'd hear you when you came.
You mean so I'd hear you? Heard you laughing clear down the front hall. What's the big joke?
Don't you dare tell.
Oh, no, not in a million years.
Have some tea, Alice.
No, thanks.
Oh, come on, Alice. You sit down and have a cup while you tell us all about what happened today.
Let me pour it for you.
Thanks, I really don't care for any. It's too hot.
Oh, that's just a notion some folks have. That you get all steamed up over a hot drink.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you come right down to it, there's nothing more refreshing on a hot afternoon than a cup of hot tea. Mm-hmm. It cools you off much quicker than a cold drink does. Now, am I right, Myra?
You absolutely are. Come on, Alice, join us.
No, thanks, really. I have to start learning lines anyway. Have to be at the studio at the crack of dawn.
Oh,
want to help me with the lines, Uncle Andy?
Oh, wait till he has another cup of tea. Then I'll send him in.
I think I've had all that's good for me. And it's been a very stimulating afternoon, Myra, especially the first part.
The first part? Oh, you just wait. I'll show you what real stimulation is. It's a promise, remember?
Oh, I'm remembering all right.
Say, what are you two talking about anyway? What's the big mystery?
Should we let her in on the secret, Myra?
Don't you dare.
No, can't let you in on it. No, sir, you're too young. You wouldn't understand.
That's the hateful kind of a remark you make to a growing child.
Well, enjoy the tea, Myra.
We'll do it again whenever you say the word. See you later.
Oh, I tell you should have tried some of that tea. It really does cool you off.
Being with that woman never cools me off.
Oh, now, see here, chickadee. Don't go off on a tangent.
Gee, good to get home.
Oh, I don't know why you rear up the way you do. Myra just put yourself out to be a good friend to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of sad and pathetic. She's been alone so much. Having us here, she said, made the place seem sort of homelike.
Mm-hmm.
I really got a bit upset, though. She turned down a call to go on location for 2 weeks, just so she could be around here and enjoy our company.
Well, that sort of puts us on the spot, doesn't it? What are we supposed to do, stay around and entertain her?
Oh, we'll make it up to her some way.
Say, what was the big secret? You both acted like you'd swallowed a mouse or something.
Oh, no, no, we didn't have anything of the kind.
I heard you laughing when I came up the stairs. What was it, anyway?
Oh, it wasn't anything at all.
Well, if it wasn't anything at all, why don't you tell me what it was?
You're just magnifying the whole thing. It was a little joke that Myra and I had, that's all. Nothing more than that.
But why act so mysterious about it?
We weren't doing anything of the kind.
You said yourself, should we let her in on the secret?
Now, see here. Just because you're my favorite niece is no reason for you to check up on every little thing I'm thinking and every little joke I'm sharing with someone else.
Oh, I'm not checking up on you, Uncle Andy, but we've always done everything together, especially since we've been out here.
Well, there are a lot of things you do that I don't check into, as much as I think they ought to be sometimes. Now, sir, you just mind your own business, young lady, and let your uncle have his private life.
I'm sorry. I had no intention of interfering with your private life.
Oh, no. Don't get huffy, dear.
Well, I'm not huffy.
You'll find out in due time what it is we're talking about.
When will I find out?
When it's over and done with, and not before.
That innocent little remark is destined to lead to an awful lot of trouble. Is Alice right in her suspicions of Myra? Is Myra out for Uncle Andy? If there's one place on earth where a man looks like a bull in a china shop, that's a beauty parlor. But I was in just such a spot the other afternoon. You see, I had a date with a lovely creature, and because she was going to be late, she told me to meet her there. Did I feel silly and embarrassed? However, I did learn something. Women pay far more attention to their complexions than we men ever realize. And when I spoke to my date about the matter, she said, "No woman can afford to neglect her skin." With a man's typically blunt curiosity, I asked her what she used on her complexion. And she replied, "If you must know, I always cleanse with Daggett and Ramsdell Perfect Cold Cream." And judging from how fresh and soft and absolutely irresistible her complexion is, I guess there must be something to this idea of cleansing your face with Daggett and Ramsdell Cold Cream every day. Why not try that 25-cent jar? Remember the name, Daggett and Ramsdell. The name you can trust. Is Uncle Andy interested in Myra? Or is he, manlike, flattered by her attention? Alice draws her own conclusion when she comes home unexpectedly in tomorrow's exciting transcribed Career of Alice Blair.
Faced with no more swimming for a while, no driving your car with the top down, no sitting out in the cool breezes to avoid the heat? These are the sad consequences of having a summer head cold. The summer variety of colds usually hits you in a very uncomfortable spot, the nose. Nothing is as mean or persistent as a stuffed up nose. You can't stop a cold from running its course, but you don't have to put up with all the discomfort. You can do something about it. Just apply Mistol drops. They're great for relieving the discomforts of a summer head cold. Mistol drops coat the nasal passages with a gentle, soothing oil. Swelling is temporarily relieved. You can breathe easier. Get a bottle of Mistol drops today and ask your doctor about Mistol drops with ephedrine. Remember, Mistol drops with ephedrine are green. Mistol drops without ephedrine are red. But don't accept substitutes. Be sure you get genuine, soothing Mistol drops. Available at all good drugstores.
This is Columbia Station for the nation's capital. Because of the importance of President Roosevelt's address to Congress, the transcription of the talk will be broadcast over WJSV at 10:45 this evening. WJSV, Washington. Good afternoon. This is your Arrow News reporter with last-minute hit-the-spot news, brought to you four times daily through the courtesy of Arrow Beer and Ale. Arrow Beer has that famous flavor that made it a big favorite in Washington and that today makes Arrow the fastest-growing beer in the city. You'll like Arrow's fine taste. It's smooth, not sweet. You'll find it better, not bitter. Every bottle always hits the spot. President Roosevelt has just called on Congress to repeal the embargo provisions of the American Neutrality Law. The president asked the legislators to substitute for the embargo a cash-and-carry system of trade with the warring nations. Mr. Roosevelt urged Congress, which was convened in extraordinary joint session, to work with one single hard-headed thought, namely, keeping America out of this war. President Roosevelt's address, together with other activities at the special session of the United States Congress, was covered fully by the Columbia Broadcasting System and station WJSB, ending just a short time ago. It will therefore not be necessary at this time to repeat details already broadcast. Meanwhile, the White House has disclosed that President Roosevelt plans to leave Washington Friday for a weekend at Hyde Park to observe the 85th anniversary of his mother's birth. Mrs. Sarah Delano Roosevelt celebrated her 85th birthday today. Six youthful assassins shot and killed Premier Armand Călinescu of Romania this afternoon. The premier was a vigorous foe of the pro-Nazi Iron Guard organization. The assassination occurred while the premier was driving by automobile to the Royal Palace. The premier was 46 years old. He also held at the time several other cabinet portfolios, including the Ministry of War. During his regime, the government had suppressed the Nazi-minded Iron Guard organization, charging it with terrorism in Romania. Two of the assassins of Premier Călinescu committed suicide by shooting tonight when surrounded in a midtown store, guards cutting off their escape. The Romanian legation in Berlin reports that an army marshal, General Ernest Balif, has been appointed as Romania's new premier. This indicates a strong militant government in the little Balkan kingdom, which has suddenly become a pivotal state in Europe. According to the legation, the cabinet has issued a statement stressing that order prevailed throughout the nation despite the assassination of Premier Călinescu. More details of the ill-fated diplomatic steps which led to the outbreak of the new European war were made public by the British government today. A white paper was issued saying that Germany answered Great Britain's ultimatum of September 2nd for withdrawal of Nazi troops from Poland, with a threat to answer any aggressive action on the part of England with the same weapons and in the same form. There's a lot of speculation just now over what is happening at sea. The British government will not comment on reports that the Bremen has been captured by British warships. Nor is there any statement about battles at sea, nor an explanation of heavy firing heard off the Danish coast. Radio broadcasts from Warsaw today, according to a report from London, say the beleaguered metropolis still is Polish. Colonel Lipinski, the Poles' official broadcaster, reports that the Poles in Warsaw are carrying on their fight against the Germans and have even scored minor victories in a few Warsaw suburbs. However, Lipinski announces that three flights of 40 German planes did great damage yesterday. He reports that Polish anti-aircraft fire brought down seven German craft, but he adds that those which were not shot down destroyed what was left of the Royal Castle, the Art Academy's National Museum, and the Central Institute for Physical Training. Jan Paderewski, now in Paris, says Poland's sacrifice has not been in vain. The world-famous Polish pianist and wartime premier of Poland believes his country's resistance has given the Allies time to make the preparations which will lead them to victory. Meanwhile, Europe's western battlefront is quiet today, but it may be only the lull before the storm. Troops are on the march in both France and Germany, moving up to bulwark front lines. France has now completed general mobilization with 6 million men under arms, and British troop movements in France continue at a feverish pace. Listen in again for the Arrow News Reporter, brought to you by the Globe Brewing Company, Baltimore, at 5:30 this afternoon. Remember, when you order beer, be sure to ask for Arrow, the beer with the famous flavor. Joe King speaking. This is Columbia Station for the nation's capital. WJSB, Washington. tantalizing twins of popular songdom are coming your way again, meaning transcribed rhythm and romance. Speaking of romance, here it is in the person of lovely Marion Forbes singing with Freddie Monroe's music, The Lamp Is Low. Prices on imported goods are going up. Furs, for example. Insurance rates for transporting furs from Central Europe have jumped 3,000%. Imagine the effect on fur prices. Zlotnik the furrier, however, prepared. Months ago, Mr. Zlotnik bought heavily of the choicest imported fur pelts. And now these gorgeous furs are available at Zlotnik's at original price levels. If you mean to buy a new fur coat, be forewarned by this good advice from Zlotnik the Furrier. Now is the time to buy your furs. Gorgeous furs, original prices, at Zlotnik's individual terms may be arranged. Zlotnik the Furrier, at the sign of the Big White Bear, 12th and G Street. Yeah, man. Swamp Eye. Thank you. What do you do when the laundry comes back? Absolutely nothing when you use Manhattan's famous Manhattan service. Everything is beautifully hand-finished, even including men's shirts ready to use. Expensive? Oh, not at all. For Manhattan has reduced the price of the deluxe, completely hand-finished Manhattan service to only $1.59 for 9 pounds. Formerly it cost, you know, $1.79. Your things are separated by color and type and washed by Manhattan's net bag method. All flat work is ironed and mended. Napkins, tablecloths, guest towels are sized to give proper body. Wearing apparel is starched if desired, mended, buttoned, sewed on, carefully finished by hand. Bath towels are fluff dried, too, and socks neatly darned. Telephone DuPont 1111 for a Manhattan root man. Remember that number, DuPont 1111. Bob Halsey plays now Dick Heath singing of romance in One Night of Love. Different, delicious, delightful. 3 D's, different, delicious, delightful. And another D, don't. Don't miss it. MGM's riotous revelation of the secrets of the fair sex, the women. Norma Shearer, Joan Crawford, and Rosalind Russell had 135 women in the movie that's all about men. See the girls as they really are. Peek behind the boudoir shades with Claire Booth, who wrote the shocking comedy that had New York gasping for a solid season. Debutantes and dowagers, sirens and stenographers, they're all in it. And they've all got their hair down. Roar, taint so, or shriek with delight, but don't miss the women. It's the sock comedy thrill of the season, and it's coming to Lowe's Palace tomorrow for the special midnight show tonight. Plan now to attend tonight's midnight show of the women. The women will treat the men. Dick Halsey's orchestra, it's classical, and it swings. (Laughs) And by the way, the broadcast of the baseball game between the Washington Senators and the Cleveland Indians will begin in just about 18 minutes from now at 4 p.m. Transcribed Rhythm and Romance will be back Saturday at this same time, so string along then, if you will. And tomorrow we'll present Hits and Encores. Joe King speaking. This is Columbia Station for the nation's capital. Because of the importance of President Roosevelt's address to Congress, the transcription of his talk will be broadcast over WJSV at 10:45 this evening. WJSV, Washington. The following broadcast is electrically transcribed. Presenting Scattergood Vane. Scattergood Vane's is brought to you by the Wrigley Company and the merchants who display and sell Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. To have a smile that people admire, you must have bright, good-looking teeth. And that's one reason you ought to chew delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum regularly every day. You see, according to modern dentists, the safe, gentle friction of the gum upon your teeth helps to cleanse the surface of your teeth and so helps to keep them bright and pretty. Then, too, the chewing of fresh-flavored Wrigley Spearmint gives your gums a natural exercise that helps to stimulate circulation and tends to strengthen the gums. That's good for your teeth, too, so aid your teeth and your smile this simple, enjoyable way. Chew healthful, satisfying Wrigley Spearmint gum regularly. Get several packages today. And now we continue the story of Scattergood Vane. For the first time since he began his campaign to rid Cold River of the gambler, Jerry Nagle, Scattergood Vane's is beginning to feel that he is making progress, despite the opposition of certain Cold River citizens. He has won over Vern Sanders, young publisher of the Cold River Independent,
And Vern is even now in the city in an effort to confirm Scattergood's belief that Nagel must have a criminal record. And yesterday, within Pliny Pickett's hearing, Scattergood made an obvious and evidently a successful attempt to arouse active jealousy in Nagel toward young Bob Hathaway, in whom Nagel's wife, Polly, has displayed marked interest. And now, as we return to Scattergood's store only a moment or two after Nagel abruptly departed, Pliny has come from the back room where he overheard Scattergood baiting Nagel and is speaking his mind concerning his old friend's action.
For God's sake, Scattergood, you know that you're fixing to get Bob Hathaway shot?
Well, I calculate the situation is serious, Pliny, but don't hardly look for nothing that drastic.
Oh, darn, Scattergood, do you know what you were saying to that man, Nagel?
Yeah, I think maybe I could repeat the conversation. Not word for word.
Well, don't you know that when you start planting suspicions in a man's mind, suggesting that his wife's been making sheep eyes at somebody else, why, if he's any man at all, he's going to go gunning for the object of her affection.
Meaning Bob Hathaway?
Me meaning? You. You was the one that put the finger on Bob.
I guess Nagel's seen Bob around before I ever seen
him. That ain't the question. It's one thing for him to see Bob cluttering up his farm morning, noon, and night. It's another thing to have a third party incinerating that it ain't all that it should be.
That at all, Pliny, it ain't all it should be.
Yeah, well, after what you said to Nagel, Bob would do well to get himself fitted for a bulletproof vest.
Yeah, well, you can suggest that to him if you want to when he comes in.
Is Bob coming here to store?
Yeah, I asked him to drop around this afternoon. Talked with him on the phone just before you come in.
Well, I don't know how you're going to have the cheek to face him after what you've just been telling Nagel about him.
Pliny, didn't it never occur to you that when a man gets as deep entrenched in the place as Nagel is, it's a pretty hard job to rout him out single-handed?
Well, what's that got to do with your telling him that Bob Hathaway...
Just to gain myself an ally, son. Pretty powerful ally, too.
Ally? Who's that?
A monster, Pliny.
Monster? Now, look here, Scattergood. Just cut out your sphinx act. Because don't go with me, and I ain't
green-eyed monster, Pliny. Jealousy, you know. And if I can get it to work to harness for me, I shouldn't be surprised, but what it'll be a big help towards pulling the Nagel menace right out of this community.
I don't get it.
No reason why you should.
You mean you're counting on Nagel pulling stakes just because his wife's been making goo-goo eyes with Bob Hathaway?
Quiet, here comes Bob past the window now.
Well, I'm going to finish what I was saying anyhow. And that's that I think you took leave of your reason, Scattergood. The very
hey,
idea...
Come on in, Bob.
Good afternoon, Mr. Baines.
Hi.
Mr. Pickett.
Hi, Bob.
Say, Scattergood, I got my commission check on that Nagel order.
You did?
How much for?
$511. Here, you want to see it?
Yeah. Yes, sir, that's what it says.
$511. By George, that's fine, Bob. Does that mean you're all finished up out the Nagel's place?
Now, if you'll take my advice, Bob, you better be finished up out there.
Well, why is that, Mr. Pickett?
Cause Scattergood...
Just a minute, Pliny. Let Bob answer my question.
Well, maybe you just assume that I wasn't here at all.
Well, now, that's a good idea you brought up, Pliny. Bye.
Bye? You mean you want I should leave you talk to Bob alone?
Yep, just like you suggested.
Well, you have plenty of time to talk to him, for I'll be back. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Did he really get sore
about it? No. Pliny has to have them little flourishes every now and then. He'll be back in tomorrow. Won't recollect a thing about it. Bob.
But what did he get mad about so quick?
Pliny's that way. He bruises easy, but he heals quick.
Yes, but he made some remark about... What did he mean, I better be finished up out at Nagel's?
I was coming to that myself, Bob. That's why I didn't urge Pliny to stay. He kept jumping the gun on me. Question is, now that you've got your order all in, collected your commission, are you going to have to be out to Nagel's anymore?
Why, no, Mr. Bain. That is, not for business reasons.
But you're keeping up the social contact, eh?
Oh, why, of course. Mr. and Mrs. Nagel have been awful nice to me, and, well, if they invite me out there, I don't know how I can get out of going. It'd be embarrassing not
I
to...
I doubt if Mr. Nagel will embarrass you with any more invitations, Bob.
Listen, Scattergood, are you telling me I can't see the Nagels anymore? Is that why you asked me to come up to the store this afternoon?
No, sir. Just the opposite.
Well, that's different. I thought maybe from the way you spoke, you were trying to choose my friends for me.
Oh, no, nothing like that, Bob. Fact of the matter is, I was going to suggest that you see Mrs. Nagel often these next few days. That is, if you're willing to take the risk.
What risk?
There is a risk, you know.
Well, I certainly wasn't aware of it.
No, I know you wasn't. Bob, would you judge that Nagel is a man that could be dangerous when he's riled?
Well, I sure wouldn't like to have Mr. Nagel sore at me.
Well, he is now.
What makes you think so? I was talking to him last night, and...
Yeah, well, I've talked to him since then.
About me? What'd you say?
You see, Bob, all the time you've been out there installing that order, Nagel's been regarding you as just a big country boy, just out of high school, born and raised in a small town. Good-looking, but too fresh and inexperienced with the world for him to be jealous of you.
Jealous? Yeah. Why should Mr. Nagel be jealous of me?
Maybe he shouldn't. Just let me go on. Nagel was in here a while ago, and while I was talking to him, I kind of give you a build-up, Bob. He said something about you being a kid, and I called him on it. I told him he's all wrong, looking on you as just a green country boy, but you're a man, getting on in the world. Was I wrong?
Why, no, Mr. Bain. I'm certainly not a high school boy anymore. Yeah. Since I've been traveling for the Seaburn Supply Company out of the city, I don't see how anyone could call me green.
Well, green ain't a bad color, Bob. It's cheap better than yeller.
What do you mean by that, Mr. Bain?
I mean I've sat back here and give you a tough job to handle, son. Before this, Nagel has just been kind of tolerating you as a big overgrown boy. Probably seen his wife and taken a liking to you, but... didn't make nothing of it, because he didn't figure you'd be a serious rival. You couldn't be.
But I'm Mr. Baines, I was only...
Now let me finish, son. So I changed all that. I built you up so as you're somebody to be contended with. And when Nagel left this store, he was all swole up with poison. Poison against you, Bob.
Gee, why did you do that, Scattergood?
Would you excuse me from giving you the details right now, son?
Why, I guess you've got a reason, but...
Question is, Bob, can you take it?
Yes, I suppose. But why do you say that?
Because I want you to watch your step, son. I'm counting on you to do something for me. And a heap depends on whether you got the nerve.
Nerve? What are you asking me to do?
Just this. Would you be willing to go to the Nagels and ask him to have dinner as your guest at the hotel and maybe take you in a movie later?
Oh, why, sure, I'll do that, Scattergood. I've been thinking I ought to do something to repay them.
Well, Ed Putz ought to be here any minute now. I told him to come here in his livery car so as he could drive you out this evening.
Oh, he won't need to do that. The Nagels are in town. Yeah. Their car was parked over in front of the post office when I came up the street.
Well, there's Ed stopping out in front now, anyway. When he comes in, I'll tell him he won't need the car. By the way, when you're talking to the Nagels, just forget that you and me had this little talk, will you?
Oh, sure. It was something I was going to do anyway.
Well, here I am, Scattergood. The car's outside.
I'm sorry, Ed. Ain't going to need it now.
Of course. Why not?
Because he wanted me to drive out to Nagels. But they're in town now,
so... Sure they're in town. I seen their car out in front of the barber shop when I drove up. Mrs. Nagel's sitting out there waiting for Ern Baker to get done shaving Jerry.
Oh, good. I guess I better go out and ask them right now before they start home.
Remember what I told you, son? Don't overstep your mark.
I'll take care of it, Scattergood.
Say, wait a minute, Pa. Wait a minute. I'll go with you. Well, what was it you was going to ask the Nagels, Bob?
Just a social invitation, Ed. They've entertained me, and I wanted to return the favor.
Sure.
Hey, Polly.
Hello there, Bob.
Gee, she is pretty, ain't she?
I certainly am glad to find you sitting out here in your car. It saves me a trip out to your place.
Oh, no. Is a trip out to our place so disagreeable as all that?
Oh, why, no. I didn't mean it quite that way.
Now that you've finished with that old order, I suppose you won't even think of coming to see little me anymore.
Oh, howdy, Mr. Nagel.
Hiya, Putz. Move over, Polly. I'll drive. What are you doing here, Hathaway?
Why, Mr. Nagel, I was wondering if you and Mrs. Nagel... You've been so nice to entertain me. I just thought maybe you and Mrs. Nagel would be willing to be my guests for dinner some night over at the hotel. And then maybe we could take in a movie later.
Oh, grand. That'd be simply wonderful, Bob.
Listen, bright boy, you ain't as dumb as you act. You know that my business won't let me get away any night.
Well, I could go. Couldn't I, Jerry?
Why, yes, of course, if you... I mean, I'd be glad to take Mrs. Nagel.
Yeah? So you would, so what? Listen to me, you overgrown hick. If I catch you so much as speaking to Mrs. Nagel here again, I'm going to mash your puss in, see?
But, Mr. Nagel, let me explain, please.
Jerry Nagel,
I can't think of anything nasty enough to call you.
Yes, so I am. So what?
So this is what. This is one time you went too far, and I'll get even with you. And I can, too, and you know how I can.
Before we leave you, here's Gattergood Baines to talk to you.
Thank you, son. I just happen to think people always get along much better when they swear by and not at each other. And did you ever notice how much easier it is to get along with folks instead of worrying and fretting about how to get even with them? You know, a body just can't be mean and happy at the same time, any more than an orange can be sweet and sour. And say, speaking about being happy, there's one surefire way to help keep your youngster feeling happy, and that's to give him some fresh taste and Wrigley's spearmint gum to chew every day. Little folks sure do go for that lively, cooling flavor of real tender spearmint leaves, the flavor for which Wrigley's spearmint is famous. You know, chewing is one of the favorite pastimes of most kiddies. And that's most likely because growing teeth need a lot of vigorous exercise. But say, when it's your youngster, you want to be sure he's protected. You want to know that when he gets that urge to chew, he has something clean and pure and wholesome to chew on. So, it's wise to always have a supply of helpful Wrigley's spearmint in the house. I suggest that when you're at the store today, you get several packages of delicious Wrigley's spearmint chewing gum off that big counter display. Let your youngster chew it every day, and you enjoy it, too. Well, I've got to be getting. See you tomorrow. Bye.
If you enjoyed today's episode of Scattergood Baines, tell your storekeeper so. He makes this program possible with his large display of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. And listen in again tomorrow at this same time for Scattergood Baines, presented for your enjoyment Monday through Friday of each week. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The preceding broadcast was electrically transcribed. This is Columbia Station for the nation's capital. Because of the importance of President Roosevelt's recent address to Congress, the transcription of the talk will be broadcast over WJSB at 10:45 this evening.